Well, it's our very first week in review for the year 2015. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Joy will be back on Monday. We'll talk about the major issues in Wisconsin and national politics, including the end of U.S. combat operations in Afghanistan, veto threats from President Obama, and Republican priorities for Wisconsin's upcoming legislative session. My two guests, Owen Robinson, a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, John.
And Tony Palmieri, a professor of communications at UW Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, John, and good morning, Owen, and Happy New Year to both.
So the 13-year-long Afghanistan war is now over. A ceremony in Kabul on Sunday marked the end of U.S. combat operations. More than 2,200 Americans died in battle in Afghanistan over the years. President Obama said the war is coming to a responsible conclusion. Tony Palmieri, do you agree? Is this a responsible conclusion?
Well, we, of course, should honor the service of our military, but really, John, Afghanistan has really been a tragedy now for so long. I would encourage your listeners to read a recent article by James Fallows of the Atlantic Monthly. You can find it online. It's called The Tragedy of the American Military. And he talks about how we've become what he refers to as a chicken hawk nation, that we're all willing to allow the nation to go to war, and then all we seem to do is call our soldiers heroes, and we think that absolves us of any responsibility, and it doesn't allow us to hold the military accountable. I mean, we're talking about probably over $1 trillion for Afghanistan. The country is still largely in disarray. It became the longest war in American history. For those people in the 1970s who were against establishing the all-volunteer military, in some ways Afghanistan and Iraq kind of confirmed their fears. That they were worried that with an all-volunteer military, presidents would essentially have an army that they could use whenever they'd like and engage in all kinds of military adventurism. So, sadly, Afghanistan became a tragic example of all of the worst trends that we've seen as regards our nation and its relationship to the military. So is it a responsible end? I'm glad it is coming to an end, although we still will have, I believe, at least 10,000 troops on the ground somewhere. So just a very bad situation, John.
Owen, what's your take on the ending of combat operations in Afghanistan?
Well, I think you can sum it up in the way President Obama phrased it, is a responsible conclusion. If that isn't a focus group tested phrase, I've never heard one. But the fact is that we went into Afghanistan years ago with the intentions of rooting out the Taliban and rooting out terrorists supporting nation states in a way to protect the world and protect our nation. It was a policy that all sides of the aisle agreed on. Democrats and Republicans all supported the Afghanistan war. Even President Obama supported that as the war that we should be fighting as opposed to the one in Iraq. We all were in there with the best of intentions. Fact is that we've lost. We lost that war because we didn't commit to it. We didn't have the resources in it to win it. We are in there and we didn't do what we needed to do to win the war. And so now we see, even as we're pulling out our troops, we see the Taliban resurging. We see it becoming once again a nation state that's supporting terrorists. And once again, it will be a nation that supports terrorists that will threaten the rest of the world. So despite the heroism of our troops and despite the treasure and lives spent in Afghanistan, I think we can mark this up as a war that America is walking out without a victory.
So, as you point out, violence by the Taliban has been on the uptick recently as the United States pulls its combat troops out of Afghanistan. House Speaker John Boehner says President Obama is not learning from his mistakes in Iraq. Owen, how concerned are you that our withdrawal is going to turn Afghanistan into another Iraq?
I'm concerned that overall in that entire region we have problems. We have a foreign policy right now that is somewhat interventionist, but not enough to do anything. It's just enough to aggravate people. So we see issues both in Afghanistan and Iraq, in Syria, and you know, all over that part of the world that's flared up, and it's much more dangerous than it was several years ago, and we don't have a foreign policy stance that, frankly, is even coherent at this point. I'm not sure what our foreign policy is over there other than just to post, throw a few supporting troops at it when people ask and hope for the best. But we don't appear to have a coherent foreign policy stance over there that's going to do us any good. So, yes, I think we can expect to see a lot more danger come out of that region and for many years to come.
Tony, what did you think about Speaker Boehner's criticism of President Obama?
It's interesting. What is he really asking for? Should we increase the troop levels in Afghanistan? Should we increase the troop levels in Iraq? Is that really where the country wants to go? Do we want to double down on policies that have clearly failed? I mean, it's classic John Boehner partisan slaps at Obama. And I think where Obama can be faulted in all of this is that he largely did continue the Bush policies in both Iraq and Afghanistan for too long of a time. I mean, he had a surge in Afghanistan in 2010, I believe it was, raised the troop levels to over 100,000 or whatnot. And so, but, you know, I think Boehner is, as typical, unfortunately, off base. I do agree with Owen that the nation's foreign policy has been somewhat incoherent. But again, there too, I think one of the tragedies of the Obama administration has not been from divorcing itself from Bush-era policies, but from doubling down on them and increasing them on everything from the use of the troops in Iraq and Afghanistan and the drone strikes and things of that nature.
Tony, did we lose you or were you finished?
Nope. Still okay. Here. I'm done.
All right. So 800-642-1234. I forgot to give the phone number at the top of the show. I was so excited about this being the first week in review of 2015, I completely lost my mind. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program, and you can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can find the Joy Cardine Show on Facebook and on Twitter. And by the way, something to look forward to. Of course, we have our week in review quiz coming up a little bit later on in the program. So, moving to another defense-related issue, the United States released 5 Guantanamo Bay prisoners, sending them to Kazakhstan. That brings the Gitmo prisoner population to 127. President Obama has renewed his push to close the prison over opposition from Congress. Should we close Gitmo? Tony, you go first.
Well, of course. And what's extremely disturbing about this is that these 5 individuals who have now been released to Kazakhstan have been held with no charges for 12 years. And is that really what this country is all about, to hold people in captivity for 12 years with no charges? I mean, you know, the president did pledge to close Guantanamo before he was even elected in 2008. It's, you know, long past time to close it. The Congress has politicized it, of course, for an entire 6-year period, but it is time now for the president to do it. And I think in his last 2 years, he will probably have to act on his own, because I cannot imagine that the new Republican Congress will vote to close Guantanamo. He'll probably have to do it on his own.
Owen, what do you think should be done about Guantanamo Bay? Do we need it, or should it be shut down?
I think, you know, the closing of Guantanamo Bay is largely a symbolic gesture, you know, tied to the policy of whether or not we should be holding foreign combatants with or without trial for, you know, forever, essentially. You know, I think the real problem is nobody knows what to do with those prisoners, because what we've seen is, you know, like a third of them that we release go back to terrorism. They go back to active terrorism, including many of the leaders of the Islamic State or former Gitmo detainees, and they're going back. So I think of the 5 we see released in this last bunch, we can expect probably 2 of them to go back to killing other people and killing Americans, if not more. So I think that's the real problem, and that's what really the nation struggles with, is do we want to just take these people and release them out and let them go back to their their terrorism ways, or is there something else we should do with them, whether that's to hold them indefinitely without trial, which I agree with Tony, I think is holds a lot of problems. It's not as distinct as because they're not American citizens, they don't enjoy constitutional rights, what they do, but they do have human rights that we need to certainly be cognizant of. So do we hold them forever just as a means to protect ourselves and protect the world, or is it something that we find some way to try them, whether in the civilian or military courts? And that's really been the struggle, figuring out what to do with them. So I think until we resolve the policy of what to do with these 127 detainees that are left, closing Gitmo is really a symbolic gesture.
800-642-1234 is the number to call, 800-642-1234. You can join the program that way or via email or social media. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll maybe move into more domestic politics and then work our way into what's going on in the state of Wisconsin as well. You're listening to our Week in Review. Owen Robinson and Tony Palmieri are with me, and you could join us as well here on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's our first Week in Review for the year 2015. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Joyce back on Monday. My two guests, Owen Robinson, columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Tony Palmieri is professor of communications at UW Oshkosh and a media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. All right, President Obama is warning Republicans that he plans to break out the veto pen in 2015. He's only vetoed two bills since 2009. Will Congress and the president accomplish much of anything this year, Owen?
I don't. Not a lot. I think that it's nice to see some acknowledgement of Obama that there is a Congress that does pass bills that he needs to either sign or not, and not just act through executive action. So I think that's a positive acknowledgement from President Obama, but the fact is he hasn't had to veto a lot of bills because he's largely had most of the bills that he opposes or ideas that he's opposed have been bottled up in the Senate for years and never ever made it to his desk. So I think now we get to see the process work how it's intended, where Congress passes bills and the president needs to decide whether he agrees with them or not and veto them or not. So I expect a lot more vetoes. I also expect Obama to get frustrated and engage in a lot more executive action.
Tony Palmieri?
I think we're going to see the Republicans pass lots of bills that are designed to appeal to their base of voters, especially going into 2016, and they'll have full knowledge that the president will veto them. You know, for example, I expect at least another vote, maybe another 40 votes, to overturn Obamacare, and we know that the president will veto that. A key item will be the Keystone Pipeline. I mean, the president keeps suggesting that he might veto any bill that would pass that. We're not sure if he will. I would expect the Congress would pass something like the Ryan budget or something similar to it, and I expect that the president would veto that. And then, of course, going into 2016, the Democrats will be able to say that their president protected the public against some of this awful legislation, but the Republicans at the same time will be able to play to their base. I will say, John, though, there is one item that there might be lots of bipartisan support on, and this issue has flown under the radar of the national media, and it's the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is kind of like NAFTA on steroids. It's one of these free trade deals, and this is something that I do think that working people in America should be opposed to. It's not getting a lot of national play, but I think the president and many in the Congress want to fast track this. So I'd encourage your listeners to look into the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, and I would say voice against it. I mean, for those of us who don't believe that NAFTA ended up being good for the American worker or for the environment, apparently the Trans-Pacific Partnership might even be worse.
Let's get a phone call in here. Dave is in Menominee, Michigan, and he joins us. Dave, thanks for being on our Week in Review.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to bring up, I wonder what the Republicans will do in this next couple of years because they just, in the last 6 years, they've really just undercut our economy, hurt our economy, almost to a point of sabotage with the way that they dealt with the debt ceiling and downgrading our credit, the shutdown, 16-day shutdown, which cost our country $25 billion. And really, just to hurt the president, they really tried to hurt the country and then try to blame the president, of course. Well, now, without the Republicans' help at all these years, they've stood in the way of everything. And the economy, we finally dug ourselves out of what President Bush did and the Republicans did while they were in power for 6 years, controlled all three houses. Just wanted to know, you know, also considering how wrong they were. Republicans said Obamacare would kill jobs, raising the minimum wage would kill jobs. They wanted to let Detroit die, you know, and they've just been wrong about everything. And I think it's important we look back at what they've been saying all this time and realize they've been wrong all this time. And now we have to watch and see what they're going to do to try to look like they're doing something, appear that they're doing something. How they're going to try to undercut the economy, I don't know. But as the economy grows, they're going to try to take credit for the economy growing after they've been sabotaging it and cutting it down for 6 years.
Okay, Dave, we get it. Owen Robinson, you first. What should the Republican strategy be in the upcoming legislative session?
Well, that was quite an impressive Democratic rant there. So, you know, covering a lot of territory. So according to Dave, Republicans somehow, even though duly elected to leadership in both houses of Congress, don't have either the right nor the responsibility to advocate for the policies and views upon which they were elected. Frankly, that's not how it's supposed to work. The parties aren't supposed to be a rubber stamp for each other. They're not supposed to be you know, agreeing with each other all the time. We do have a system where we have diverse views in the Congress, diverse views in our nation that are meant to be represented in the Congress and have people advocating for those policies and those views. So if he's asking whether or not the Republicans should just become a rubber stamp for the minority party that was voted out of leadership, I think that's a ridiculous stance, and I doubt that the Republicans are going to.
All right, let's wrap up our discussion of national politics by asking each of you what your story of the year was for 2014 and then which issue you think will dominate the new year. Tony, you first. What was your national story of the year for 2014?
Well, I guess, you know, it's sadly it was a tragedy, but I think Ferguson, Missouri brought forward the racial politics in a way that we have not seen in a long, long time. And it also called forward similar issues of income inequality and militarization of the police and things of that nature. So, you know, I thought that Ferguson tragedy really crystallized some of the really bad trends of the last 10 to 20 years in this country. And so that's what I think 2014 was all about.
What about what do you think is going to be the story that will dominate the coming year?
What will dominate 2015, I think, will be the political gridlock in Washington. I think we're going to see a very contentious battle over pretty much every policy. It will be crisis management. And much of it will be, even though the presidential election is 22 months away, I think much of 2015 will be playing out some of that. I mean, Jeb Bush has already pretty much announced his intention to run for the Republicans, which I think is going to open up the floodgates to many more candidates getting in. Hillary Clinton, of course, is the presumptive nominee for the Democrats, but I expect others to get in to primaries on that side. And I think that politicking for 2016 will have the effect of really dominating much of what we talk about in 2015.
Owen Robinson, what was your top story for 2014, and what do you see going forward as the big story in 2015?
I think nationally and perhaps globally, the biggest story that really has touched many, many things throughout the world, throughout the nation, has been the collapse in the price of oil. You've really seen the price of oil drop 50% since mid-year. We've seen gas now in my area of Wisconsin dropping below $2 a gallon, where it was close to $4 at the beginning of the year and years prior. So, and when you look at how that affects things, it ripples through the entire economy, because you get, you know, your average Wisconsinite, you're filling up your car, you know, 15 gallons a week, say, that's an extra $30 a week going in your pocket. That's the greatest stimulus that this nation has seen in a very long time. You know, nationwide, that's about, it's over $250 billion of money going directly into consumers' pockets. And where it affects people most are in the lower income strata, where they spend a much larger percentage of their family budget on, you know, on gas for their cars, on fuel for their lawnmowers, for heating their homes, for all the things we use petrochemicals for. We're seeing the price really come down and really affect the economy. And I think globally, I think this leads us into 2015, where we're already seeing the impact of that with the undermining of the global petrocracies out there of Saudi Arabia, of Russia, of Venezuela, of these nations who used to hold the world by the nose and tell them where to go, are losing their power because the price of oil has come down so far. So I think we're going to see a lot of effect of that, and if the futures markets are right, we expect the price of oil to stay low for the next at least 2 years throughout the rest of Obama's presidency. And I think that really destabilizes a lot of the bad nation states, I'll put it that way, out there that we don't like, and really helps America. And we're going to see America become the largest oil producer in the world in 2015. We've already become the largest energy producer in the world. And that really changes our position at a time when a lot of America, of where America's status is in the world, is in question or declining. This is an area in energy production and energy assertion where America's really going to step into the fore in 2015.
800-642-1234, the number to call to join our Week in Review conversation on Wisconsin Public Radio, 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Owen Robinson and Tony Palmieri are with me, and we're talking about what's going on this week in the news. And let's move to state issues, because there's plenty of that to talk about. The legislative session about to start for the new year. Of course, we'll have the inauguration of Governor Walker and his budget message shortly thereafter. So lots to talk about. Governor Walker has been giving year-end interviews and has been talking about this upcoming legislative session. He says property taxes can still be cut, even though the state faces a $2.2 billion budget shortfall. The governor says he's focused on property taxes, not income taxes, but he's being vague on how he plans to balance the budget and cut taxes at the same time. Owen, do you have any ideas about how Governor Walker is going to pull this off?
Well, I think first we have to acknowledge that the $2.2 billion deficit that people talk about is the difference between the wish list that the various agencies have put forth versus the expected tax revenues of future years. In other words, it's a deficit that is for a budget that has not yet been written. So there is no deficit until we actually write a budget and know what we're going to have. I think it's disappointing, frankly, that Walker allowed his agencies to put forth such ridiculously large wish lists, including a $750 million increase for the Department of Transportation alone. So I think that, you know, so as far as the deficit, that it's not really out there in the way that it's phrased in some things. But how Walker's going to do it, I mean, he's being vague in a lot of areas and noncommittal in a lot of areas right now, as you would expect before there are actual bills being written in front of him that he's having to decide what to do with. I think his focus on property taxes is fine. I mean, Wisconsin is still a top five state in the nation in property taxes. It's a huge burden, particularly on those with fixed incomes and lower income folks who you know, that's a big chunk of your budget trying to fund every year. But income taxes were also a top 10 state in the nation. So the fact is, Wisconsin continues to be a heavily taxed state, and it needs focus in a lot of areas. Where I hope Governor Walker spends his time is focusing on spending. But he really can't affect real structural change and real sensible, rational budgeting where you have revenues meeting your expenses while still bringing down the tax burden unless you really get a hold of the spending in Wisconsin. And his acquiescence to the Department of Transportation's wish list so far is really disturbing in how we head into this next budget.
Tony, should property tax relief be the state's top priority for this upcoming legislative session?
I'm not sure, but one thing we need to be very careful of in this particular session is that everything that Scott Walker does this year has got to be framed in terms of his possible presidential ambitions. And I think that's unfortunate. I mean, I think he's looking at framing state policy in a way that will help him nationally. And the fact of the matter is we do have a deficit going into this session largely because of his policies, especially his tax policies. And so if he's concerned about property taxes, and I agree with Owen, property taxes are too high in this state. I mean, really, the best way to do something about property taxes is to revamp the state's shared revenue program, which provides monies for local governments so that they at the local level can provide property tax relief. Unfortunately, the legislature has shown little regard for that program over the years. What I hope the governor does not do to balance the budget this year is start doing things like selling off state properties, state-owned power plants and things of that nature. I mean, because, you know, once states sell off properties that they own, they could be put in the awkward position of having to lease back what they've just sold. So, I mean, this will be a much better discussion once we know what the governor is actually proposing, but I do believe that his own presidential aspirations are going to color pretty much everything in this budget.
Wisconsin is facing a shortfall of $132 million in the current fiscal year, tax collections running behind expected growth. However, Governor Walker says he's confident we will not need a budget repair bill. He said the Department of Administration will manage state expenses to make sure we finish the fiscal year with a cash balance. Do you share the governor's confidence, Tony, or are we going to need a budget repair bill?
Well, again, here's what's so fascinating about this. I thought that Act 10 solved all these problems for us, that we would no longer be in these situations, that we would have the kind of economic growth that would give us the money in our coffers that we would need. And, you know, I mean, to me, it appears that Act 10 has not worked. The governor's policies have not worked. And we are once again looking for budget solutions to deficits that are caused largely by the policies of the governor. So will we need a budget repair bill? Well, when the governor came in 2010, he told us then that having a deficit was such a crisis that he needed to revamp 50 years of state law. So why is this particular deficit now not a crisis? Maybe that's something that Owen can answer for us.
Owen?
I'm not sure how Act 10 got roped into that, but I think the $3 billion in tax dollar savings that the taxpayers have enjoyed while test scores have gone up since Act 10 has been passed, I think that speaks to how well Act 10 has been working. And it's something I see in my local community, both in my city and in my school district, where they've been able to do creative and new things while maintaining a flat or decreasing tax rate, which has been fantastic for the taxpayers of my community. But going back to the deficit discussion, we're heading into the end of the fiscal year, the end of the budget year. We have 2-year budgets. We're heading into going to the end of the last fiscal year of the 2-year budget with a projected $132 million deficit. Bear in mind that represents about 0.5% of the overall budget and where we're off. So if you think of when you sit down into your family budget, if you're going to do it for 2 years from now and decide where you're going to be, if you're 0.5% off when you get to the end of that 2-year cycle, you're doing pretty well. And I think it's pretty easy for the state of Wisconsin, which spends billions and billions and billions of dollars every single year, to adjust for 0.5% in a budget offset by the end of this fiscal year. I think we're going to be fine. We're not going to need a budget repair bill.
Senator John Erpenbach gave the Democratic address this week, saying the party is committed to preparing citizens for the workforce, improving workplace flexibility, and investing in needed infrastructure upgrades. Tony, is that a better focus for the state than property tax relief?
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, unfortunately, the Democrats have now, they're such a minority in the Assembly and the Senate. It'd be interesting to see if the Republicans take Democratic ideas at all seriously. You know, I think what the Democrats need to do going forward, looking to 2016, is really become a more visible reform party, which will mean standing for some really big ideas on the economy, on education, and politics. You know, Mike McCabe, who just stepped down as executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, has been saying for years that we need to get our democracy right. That's the first thing we need to do. And so maybe the Democratic Party should start really standing tall for reform of the way we do campaigns in the state. I mean, every time you bring up something like that, they'll say, well, people don't really care about that issue. Well, maybe they would care about it if a major political party talked about it day in and day out. Because we're in this situation now where, I mean, think about it. We just went through an election season in 2014. How many seats in the state were really competitive? I mean, until we do something about that Democratic, small-D Democratic crisis, it just seems to me public policy is going to suffer in every area. So is Erpenbach right on some of the general goals? Yeah, but I think that the Democratic Party needs to start being louder about some really big idea reforms, and they need to stand for those things in a very bold, bold way. Just one more example. I mean, it just looks like the Republicans are intent on expanding the school voucher program, which really means that taxpayers in this state are going to be footing the bill really for two school systems. All right. Is that really what we want in this state? And I think the Democrats need to not only come out against that, but really come out for some really strong reform of K through 12 education in this state that voters can get behind during election year.
Owen, are the Democrats going to have any input into state policy in the next session, or is it going to be the GOP's way or the highway?
I think it's realistically, if they're putting forward bills that Republicans can get on board with, I think they will have influence. I think we've seen a couple of Democrats, like Senator Schilling and stuff, putting forward some ideas in a way to nibble around the edges of Republican ideas in a Democratic way, that I think they will probably be able to have some influence on those bills. But Erpenbach's speech is interesting that it's from a couple ways. One, it's very nonspecific, which is exactly where Walker is, and that's where they should be. There's nothing specific to talk about at this point until there's specific proposals put forth. But again, Erpenbach is there saying that, you know, it's a classic position from a minority party. Now is the time to all get along and appreciate each other's ideas and this, that, and the other thing. You know, from a guy who fled the state because he didn't want to get along with Republicans when it came to Act 10 or try and do anything. So I take it as a little bit of a sideways view from somebody who didn't even want to stay in the same state to work through a bill to now say that we all need to get along and appreciate each other's ideas and put forth essentially the Democratic agenda. No, the GOP was elected in majorities to strong majorities after Act 10, after the 2011 budget, after all the things the Republicans have done. They were elected to stronger majorities, more conservative majorities in the legislature, and Governor Walker was reelected. I think that's the voters of Wisconsin saying they want more of that, please.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back and have more of our Week in Review. 800-642-1234, the number to call. Still to come, also the Week in Review quiz. That's also coming up, so stick around for that. Owen Robinson and Tony Palmieri are my guests this hour. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to this Week in Review on the Joy Cardine Show, which is coming to you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's our Week in Review, the very first one for the new year. Happy New Year to everybody. Owen Robinson, a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and blogger at bootsandsabers.com, is one of my guests this morning. Tony Palmieri, a professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene, is also with me. Let's take a phone call from Teresa in Fenimore. Teresa, thanks for joining us.
Hi. Hello.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. You're on.
Well, I had a question. Okay, they're talking about a $132 million deficit right now. Weedick had the $160-some million that walked out the door, and they shouldn't have let it go. They were all thrilled that they got $140 million back, but there's still like $26 million that's they can't seem to get back because somebody got it. How much of this can we let go on in our government where people, I'm a bookkeeper by trade. That just floors me that so much of their budget could have walked out the door on things that shouldn't have been walking out the door. And now they're all thrilled that they got a part of it back. Meanwhile, it's my tax dollars, and it really frustrates me. If they want to give me $26 million, I'd be more than happy to take it.
Teresa, thanks for the call. Owen Robinson, who holds people accountable for things like Teresa's talking about?
I think I agree with Teresa in that it's we do need to make sure that we don't have, that we're not, essentially the taxpayers aren't getting scammed, that we're not seeing what is the taxpayer money that was sent to the state or sent to the local governments for the due operations of government to make sure those aren't going where they don't need to be. I think that, you know, there's when you have people whenever you have government just handing out cash to private individuals, you need to have a lot of scrutiny, a lot of oversight, and there will always be fraud. There will always be mistakes, and the people who make those mistakes or certainly engage in fraud need to be held accountable.
Tony, what do you think about what Teresa had to say?
Well, here's the thing, John. The Governor Walker is talking about restructuring state government in this budget cycle. And it seems like every time we restructure state government, we end up using more private firms for what used to be state-run policies or whatnot. And it just seems to me we end up costing taxpayers a lot more money. So, you know, my fear is that going into this budget cycle, we could actually be seeing less accountability going forward and not more accountability going forward. And that's a problem. And so what Teresa's talking about will get even worse.
Let's take another call. We'll go to Willem in Colfax next. Willem, go ahead.
Hello. I just wanted to say something about what Mr. Robinson said about the oil. I think it is good that oil prices are low as far as stimulating our economy. It puts more money into people's pockets and less into their gas tanks. But it's not because of domestic oil production. And his assertion that somehow this is connected to domestic oil production, I think, is false because it takes, a higher oil prices to support industries like fracking, which are a lot more expensive to produce oil than doing what the Saudis are doing, which is pumping their sweet crude oil, and which they say they can make money at $20 a barrel, when American production needs at least to probably $60 a barrel to be profitable. So I think that's a false statement. And what I'm concerned about is in this legislative session is Senator Tiffany's third attempt to pass a bill which would limit local control. And the reason that he's doing that is to make it easier for the frac sand industry to come into our communities and open frac sand mines with little input from the local people. And I think that's sort of ironic that this is happening under a Republican administration, which supposedly has one of their tenets be local control. And I think local control is one of the basic and essential parts of our democracy, the right of the people to control, what happens in their communities. And I think of his attempt to limit that or to eliminate that is just an outrageous attempt. And I wonder how much of this degradation of our democracy are the people willing to put up with before there's a big flash, big pushback. And then the last thing I'll say is that all this talk about this huge mandate is that Governor Walker barely, he won a little bit more than half of a quarter of the vote. I mean, more than half of the electorate. So that's like, you know, the problem is that most people don't vote. And the people that did vote, you know, only half of those voted for Walker. So it's not like the people are rising up and saying this is what we want. I think the Republicans are putting together a very radical, not a conservative, but a very radical agenda.
Well, let's stay on the Tiffany local control bill as the nugget we want to pick out of that call. Owen, we'll go to you first. What about Senator Tiffany's efforts to reduce local control of frac sand mining?
Well, boy, Willem covered a lot of territory there. So as far as local control for, I mean, local control is a core tenet, I think, of Americanism, if anything, you know, not just one party or the other, and that, you know, as best as we can, we want things to be controlled by locally, because there's a confidence in the American voter and the American people that we can manage our own affairs ourselves. So I don't need somebody from the state coming in and telling me how to run my city, and I don't need somebody from the federal government coming in to tell me how to run my state. Of course, we've seen that broken down time and time again, and local control becomes a rallying cry whenever we're on the side of that that we don't like. So we see Democrats loving things like Obamacare or you know, federal policies that affect states that way. We see them loving things like universal education policies through DPI that go throughout the state and take away local control from local school districts, and yet we see them oppose things like this, where trying to have uniform rules for businesses who engage in business in the state, regardless of which community they go to, they seem opposing that. So I think that's it's a bit of a false argument. I think what we need to do is look at what Tiffany is actually proposing. Is it good for the citizens of Wisconsin? Is it good for growing business in Wisconsin? Is it safe for the environment? And then move forward from there.
Tony Palmieri?
Well, the Republicans have always rhetorically believed in local control, but then when they get into government as a majority, they immediately take away local control, and we've seen that on many issues. But Willem is really right. I mean, on something like frac sand mining, you've got to have local communities, you've got to give them the power to say no to having this done in their backyard. I mean, who among us would not want to have that major say and the power to determine what is done literally across the street from where we live? I mean, the state of New York, by the way, just, I believe, banned fracking. And, I expect in 2015 we're going to see more states go down that road rather than the other side, as all the good scientific data comes out about what fracking can really do. So, yeah, I think we do need more local control, not just on this issue, but on a variety of issues.
Let's move on to another issue. Governor Walker is again saying that he doesn't want lawmakers to take up a right-to-work bill this session, saying it will distract from his agenda. However, lawmakers seem poised to pass it anyway. The governor has also said there really isn't any more he can do to put the brakes on the issue. Tony Palmieri, is Wisconsin going to become a right-to-work state?
Unfortunately, probably yes. The Republicans have huge majorities in both houses of the legislature. I think the governor has said that while he's not going to push for it, he hasn't said that he won't sign it. I think he's being somewhat coy about it, because if, assuming he does run for the presidency, I think he will try to appeal to the so-called Reagan Democrats, you know, a lot of the blue-collar Democrats, many of whom were union folks in places like Michigan and Ohio. You know, especially Ohio would be an important state for him. So, you know, unfortunately, I do think that this will be fast-tracked in the state Senate, and I do think that the governor will probably sign it. However, I see little evidence that becoming a right-to-work state somehow increases Wisconsin's competitiveness. And let's face it, the Republicans since 2010 have gotten pretty much everything they've wanted in state policy, everything, and yet we are not competing. We are not doing as well economically as our Midwestern peers. So this will be one further step in that direction of the Republicans getting everything they want in public policy, but not really showing results for it.
Owen?
I think that, you know, I think Governor Walker's stance can be completely explained by what Tony referenced earlier, in that everything has to be put in context of his possible run for the presidency. And Walker supported right to work. He advanced right to work legislation years ago when he was in the assembly. It's something he has rhetorically supported over the years. And now when it comes, you know, right there where it's possible, he's starting to hem and haw and, you know, it's not a priority and this kind of thing, which I agree with Tony. What he's trying to do is have it both ways, where if it passes in the state, he will take credit for it as a conservative initiative and use that in his base, at the same time saying that it wasn't something he really pushed for, but, you know, I had to do it because the legislature did it. But I do think ultimately we will be a right-to-work state within a few months. I think it is good for Wisconsin. My biggest fear, frankly, is that we have a lot of negotiation, I'll put it, going on inside the Republican caucus of what the right-to-work legislation will actually look like, and will it exempt certain trade unions and other folks, which I think is a horrible idea that would really pull down the underlying argument for right to work in the first place. If you start exempting people, it opens up Republicans to accusations of favoritism, of cronyism. All of those accusations would probably be correct. So I hope they pass a clean right to work bill. I hope they do it quickly, and I hope Wisconsin becomes the 25th state to be a right to work state.
We need to take a time out here for our Week in Review quiz, the first one of the year. And if you listen to WPR News this week, you should know the answer. Superior, Wisconsin may find its way into the Guinness Book of World Records this winter. A man from Minnesota is being paid by the city to build what? Superior, Wisconsin may find its way into the Guinness Book of World Records this winter. A man from Minnesota is being paid by the city to build what? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. We'll put callers on the air to guess, and the first one to get it right will be the winner. That person will receive a low-value prize that he or she can show off to all their friends and make them very jealous. 800-642-1234. What is it that the city of Superior is paying a man from Minnesota to build that may get Superior into the Guinness Book of World Records? 800-642-1234. Again, we'll take our answers on the air, and the first one to give the right answer will win our prize. And we'll start in Mosinee, where Don is on the air. Is it Don or Dan? Dan is on the air. Dan, go ahead.
Yes, the gentleman is building a glacier.
A glacier? Judges, is that an answer that we can accept? It's close enough. It's an ice sculpture that's supposed to look like a glacier. You really listened to the detail on that story, as our own Danielle Kading reported it. Dan from Mosinee, you win our prize. Stick around, hang on, and Brianne will be on the phone with you to get your particulars so we know where to send the prize. So congratulations on that, and thanks again to Tony Palmieri and Owen Robinson for participating in our inaugural 2015 Week in Review. Appreciate both of you being on the air with me this morning. Thanks a lot, and Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Thank you. You too.
This program was produced by Bill Martins, on-air production by Brianne Chassow, and our show director was Bill Martins as well. Joy Cardine is back in her appropriate place on Monday morning. I will probably sleep until at least 5:30. It's been a real pleasure to host the Joy Cardine Show this week, and props to the great production staff, the crew here at Wisconsin Public Radio, for helping things along. Really appreciate their efforts, as always. It takes a village to make a talk show. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. She's back on Monday. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. ¶¶